Welcome back, Raw Thoughts listeners, to another episode with myself, Mackenzie Tiggs. I just want to remind you that you're more than welcome to head over to my website, rawthoughtspodcast.com, see all of our guests that have been on the episodes so far, and reach out to them, connect with them, ask them questions. I encourage you. This is the fruit of the labor of getting to actually connect with people that have shown you an impact in your life. So I want to thank you again for just coming on, listening to another episode. I encourage you to like, follow, and subscribe to the podcast. Today, I actually have a dear friend with me. Our history goes, back to like 2014, which is insane to even say. A little bit about my background. Not a lot of people know that I was actually a wildland firefighter. And then on one of the off seasons, I was working for a adolescent alcohol and drug rehabilitation center. And this is where I met Matt. So welcome, Matt.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Matt McCark. I fought wildland fire from 2000 to 2016 is actually when I officially left. I'm a fire baby. My dad fought wildland fire back before, the wildland guys will know, but back before 2-1. And now currently I work for a city fire department in Southeast Idaho, Chubbuck Fire. I also serve as the union president for Local 4155. I'm a dad and I'm a pretty awesome husband, really, I like to think, to an amazing woman. And I have two beautiful little girls that I adore. I did it all in wildland. I started on the engines. I stayed on the engines for the bulk of my career. I did do a season on a helicopter. And then I finished out my career, my last 3 years, as the assistant tanker base manager in Pocatello. And I was also one of the, people that dealt a lot with the DC-10 aircraft. That's the infamous, big, famous one. Mm-hmm. But primarily I was a seat manager. So, short and sweet on that one.
Yeah.
I could go for a while on it, but yeah, that was the bulk. So most of my career was done on engines. I did a roll or two with a couple of hand crews. And engine life was my life. I mean, I love that shit. That was the way to go for sure. So,
and I was on the engine for 2 years, and it was fun.
Yeah,
it was a different atmosphere, but it was really great.
Yeah, it's the jam for sure. And in my opinion, right next to dozers, you see the most flame. Mm-hmm. The burnout operations are more fun. I mean, I loved burning with hand crews, but engines, it's just rip it and rip it kind of style. It was a lot of fun. It was cowboy some days, and some days it was calculated a little bit more, and you know, bigger operations. But some of the best ones are the little ones, you know, sleeping up on a hillside, single tree stuff. And I worked in Idaho Falls District all of my career, and there they expect a lot of their engine crews, which we loved. I never had a complaint about that. That was kind of the fun part. We crew up a lot and hike in, and it was rad. I worked the whole district. I spent the bulk of my career in Malad. And then I moved up to Pocatello and kind of switched roles a bit. It was kind of voluntary, kind of involuntary. I kind of had to go to Pocatello. I met the girl I married, and I wanted to be closer to her. And I kind of took a little downgrade from a captain and just kind of became a rover, which I enjoyed the shit out of, because I got to work with crews all over the fucking district. If a guy needed a day off, I'd go up and run his truck for him. And that shit was fun, because you get to meet all these different people. You get to do all this different shit. It was a good time. And I got a lot of experience out of that. So it was basically I would go summers on fire.
Yeah.
Like, it was fire to fire to fire to fire, because a dude had a wedding, or a dude had a vacation, or a dude hurt himself. So I was all over the place, and I enjoyed it. I loved the guys I worked with, and it was a truly rewarding experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. The one thing I would do different is I would probably take a little bit better care of my joints, and maybe I would have had a lot less beers. But ultimately, I'm happy I did it.
Yeah.
I treasure that experience.
What, besides your dad, or maybe this is the answer, but What truly got you into wildland firefighting? What were you like, I want to do that?
It was actually a guy named Con Yost and a guy named Darren Williams. So my dad was like the in my opinion, was like the picturesque engine boss, right? He'd get his crew together and shit, and they had a lot of fun, and they'd always play in a golf tournament every summer. And one summer, I literally toted these dudes' bags around. Like, I was like 8. They're having their golf tournament, and I'm caddying for these guys, right? Because my dad didn't have anywhere to take us, and it was like the one day he was fucking home. So I'm like, I'm going.
Yeah.
And so at any rate, these guys talked to me, and I ultimately, it was their rapport, you know, it was the way they treated each other and that team aspect, right? And I actually almost ended up enlisting in the military when I was 18. So I hadn't heard back from the BLM. And Darren was the guy that was supposed to hire me. And I'm like, I'm in, you know, I'm this 18-year-old kid. And I'm like, my dad's this. And you know, and it kind of took a long time. And I was starting to panic, right? And I was like, man, I saw how these guys did it. This is what I got to do. I want to see this shit. I want to live this life. I want to go hike around in the mountains and being outside and all these things. And they weren't calling. So I took the ASVAB. And like I was literally going to sign papers, right? And this is in 2000, 2001, right?
Yeah.
So technically my first year was in 2000, right? I worked at the tank base. I did some stuff out there with retardant and stuff. I was old enough to do it. And so 2001 rolls around and I'm like, let's go, you know, and nothing's happening. So I'm like, fuck, I got to get a job. Like I'm going to graduate. I'll do this, I guess. So military looked good. And the week before I was supposed to sign enlistment paperwork, Darren called me and said, well, you want the job or what? And I was like, fucking A, thank you. So I took the job. Didn't enter the military, obviously, because that wouldn't have been a good one for me.
No.
I started the week or 2 weeks before I graduated high school, I started with the BLM. And I missed my high school graduation. I had to have the school board approve me missing school. And it was a lot of hoops to jump through to start this line of work. But that was the start date. And I was the youngest dude there. I was 18 years old, and I was fresh as shit. Bleached blonde hair, no beard, like total attitude problem, like thought I was hot shit. And within a quick 3 months, my life drastically changed. Rooking was hard, especially, and Wade Christopherson, my first engine boss, could tell you this. When you're a pain in the ass, it is a lot harder, especially like when you piss people off constantly, which I was real good at. And then, so yeah, that's kind of how it came to it. But I was raised in fire. It quite literally made a man out of me, and it had to happen quick. And I did a shit ton of push-ups for pissing people off. And I did a lot of sit-ups. I probably did, I don't know, I'll exaggerate and say 20,000 push-ups my first summer. I mean, it was insane, but I learned not to leave the headlights on in a fire truck. So it was bananas, but man, it was fun. Just this wide-eyed kid.
So what kept you in the career for that long?
The boys, without a doubt. The people.
I want you to elaborate because I have had the privilege to going to these big fires, not only as the firefighter, but also going out to the wildfires as a medic and being able to serve the people. And I, for, you know, the listeners have got to experience this. Mm-hmm. I want you to elaborate more and us talk about what it truly is about the people.
Sorry if you had to listen to me drink water, but it's hard to explain. Imagine having a sibling that you'd never met until you were grown and finding this person that gets you and that understands the shit you've been through. And every wildland person that listens to this podcast is going to be like, oh, fuck, that's it. You share misery with these people. The men and women that do this job, you live through crazy shit. You live through tragedy. You live through adrenaline. you live through sleeping standing up, and the only person that can truly understand that is the people that have done it.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I know for a fact military dudes have done that shit.
Yeah.
I don't resonate with military dudes like I do firemen. But I respect the shit out of it because I know that they know. But it's different. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like only a dude that's run a chainsaw for 16 hours knows what it's like to run a chainsaw for 16 hours. You know, only
and that is not exaggerated. No. Like when you say 16 hours, like that is you're breaking to like cool it down to refuel. Yep. Like that is
sharpen your chain and move on.
It is a true 16 hours when you talk about it.
Yeah. Yep. It is. And I loved every fucking minute of it. And so did the people I work with. You know, it's crazy because, and we'll get into this more later, but like those dudes, I'd do anything for any one of them at any time. Mm-hmm. And they do the same for me. And it's just, it's nuts because you never lose that connection. You know, like I could not see somebody, for years and then just pick right back up. And it's because we held that misery together, you know, that pure suck. Like
you and I experienced some different kind of suck besides the wildland firefighting.
Oh, fuck. Fuck. What I was thinking in that, I have no idea. That was...
We both were a little crazy at that time.
I don't even put that fucking job on resume. So, like, that was a nightmare. But, yeah, no, it was insane. But, yeah, I think truly, like, what kept me was that bond. You know, that and I felt that it was something that I was good at. And I had a purpose. You know, I had a purpose. And my purpose necessarily wasn't to save sagebrush. It was to go out and do that, mm-hmm. and to embrace the suck that fucking hard. You know, it's hard work. You know, I meet people everywhere now because of my current role. And, you know, you talk to people from back east and they're like, what's wildfire like? And I'm like, dude, you couldn't fucking handle it. it's big. It's nasty. You're tired. You're sweating.
It's
you're
scary.
Dirty. It's scary for some. My first year, it scared the shit out of me. But slowly that fear turned into experience.
Yep.
And I became comfortable in the job. Now, I was always learning. I've always said that the day I stop learning in this job is the day I die.
Yep.
And it was just fucking cool. Like, the shit we got to do, you know, I remember my first year, I was standing on the Continental Divide, the top of it, right? And I was standing there with a guy named Ben, and amazing individual. He currently is moved in the structure world as well. And I looked at him and I was like, which side are you going to piss off of? You know? And he's like, well, I'm going to go east. Do you want to go west? And I was like, fucking A. So it was just funny. And then, you know, you pinch it off and switch. And just stupid shit, you know, just having fun and getting a lot of work accomplished and, in my opinion, doing good. That's the ultimate goal, right? Is to leave things better than you found them.
Yeah.
And granted, there was some chunks of ground that I left much worse than I found. You know, they were black after I left. But ultimately, it was the goal. And we did it. And it was fun. So, I mean, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Pretty cool gig. That's how I got into it.
That is. No, it is. It is cool. And it's definitely that camaraderie, you know, mm-hmm. amongst the people where... You know, some of my biggest, just like, why did I get into it? Well, why I got into it was completely different. But what kept me into it was going to those big fires and having camp and seeing how every single person had their own task and then they could build something with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you are on those big fires and you have your divisions and you have your, you know, supervisors and it's all broken down and then you have one day a field and then the next day you have a small little town and it has a whole system underneath of it. And you have, you know, your IC and all of these breakouts and just all of the moving parts and to accomplish everybody coming together and knowing that I have to do my task to help everybody else. And it's really that team aspect of, yes, you're individually doing what you need to do, but if you're not individually doing this, then nobody else, you know, the people around you aren't able to rely on you.
Oh yeah. 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 The best piece of advice I ever received in any incident command class, was how to eat an elephant.
One piece at a time.
One bite at a time. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and it's super fucking corny to say that, but it's true. And I've used that in my everyday life, you know, thanks Greg Birch for telling me that, but it's a moving organism almost, you know, you're always part of a greater picture. And like I said, I mean, you have true purpose, you know. If I'm a lead saw, I know what I'm doing. There's no question.
Right.
If I'm a Pulaski in the line, I know what I'm doing. And if I'm not doing it, the beauty of it is that next person will call you out. Mm-hmm. And there is no fucking around in that. It was funny. I was having this conversation last night. We were comparing the ash chewings in Wildland versus the ash chewings in Structure Fire.
Ooh.
And it's a whole nother world. I mean, whole nother world. But it's just, it's wild because, it's just nuts. But yeah, you're 100% correct. It is being part of a bigger picture, and you may just be one brushstroke in that painting, but you matter.
You matter. For sure.
I
think it will never go, you know, untold of how dirty and how smelly and how disgusting you get on fires. I mean, I think the longest I went with truly not showering was 17 days.
My record was 36 in 2001.
It is brutal. Yeah, it is. But
I don't count canals as a bath, although it's kind of a bath.
Yeah.
So there was some canal bathing in there, but I don't really count that.
I was going to say, I didn't even have a canal.
Yeah, you just use a rock and scrub yourself off. But yeah, it's gross.
It's gross, you know, and people are like, oh, why would you want to do that? I'm like, there's so much reward in it, you know, there is so much more reward in it than, and I think the bigger picture, right? Like I can go without taking a shower for 17 days because this is what I'm getting to provide. And this that I'm getting to provide is bigger than who I am. And I think you resonate with that of it's not about us. It's about what we can do to provide within there.
Yeah, the way I always saw it was I can lose a bath so someone doesn't lose a house.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's better now. And granted, like it's... There's more mechanisms now, you know, you have fire wipes and larger wet wipes and shit like that. And it's way better now, for most of them. Mm-hmm. But, at that time, dude, we were dirty and smelly and you know, the shit we did.
I just had totally like a fire memory come up just like reminiscing on this. What is one of like your best stories being in Wildland?
I don't know. They're all pretty good. It's funny because I get asked that a lot. Like, what's the coolest thing you ever did? It was all fucking cool.
What's just like the funniest story? Because I think there's so much cool stuff. But I think within Wildland, there's just some like off the wall shit that happens.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, you know, getting put on dead divisions and trying to find a creek. Oh, man. I'll tell you what. One of my coolest stories, we'll go there. So, and everybody's going to think this is super jovial if you haven't done this job, but I was running a crew and I had four guys under me and we're on this fire in the middle of Utah, literally the middle of Utah. I don't know if you know where Roosevelt, Utah is, but it was the Neola North fire. And we'd had some pretty shitty assignments and that was a fatality fire, and we had to go in and evaluate the area where the fatality occurred to make sure that crews could come in, and it sucked. That fire was shit, but they had muffins every morning, and I don't know who started it, but one of the guys starts putting his muffin. He gets two muffins every morning, and he takes them both, and he sets them on the dash of the truck, and that was on, like, day one, right? And that day where we took a 20-minute break at 10 o'clock, right? and we're at the chase truck, thankfully. And he reaches in there and grabs his muffins and he starts eating them, and he's just fucking grinning. And I'm like, what is it, dude? And I was like, what the fuck are you? And he's like, they're warm.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And he's like, I'm eating warm muffins. And it's so funny because he had like the deepest voice and he was a really funny dude. And he looks at me and he winks. And I'm like, fuck you, give me one. And he's like, no. And
like,
I'm like,
my muffins.
And I'm like, fuck, asshole, like share. And he's like, uh-uh. And then the next day we go back and everybody gets two muffins, right? But this day they had fresh fruit. Mm. So every morning at 10 o'clock on this fire, we would eat warm muffins and fresh fruit. And I don't know what the fuck it was about it, but it was literally the greatest thing ever. And one day they didn't have muffins.
Uh-oh.
And this is on day 11 that they didn't have muffins. And this dude lost his shit. And he's like talking to the kitchen staff and he's like, where the fuck are the muffins? And I'm like, dude, you need to calm the fuck down. And the lady's like, I'm sorry, I don't know. And I was like, ma'am, it's fine. And she's like, so I'm so sorry. And we're like, yeah, it's cool. So we go sit and eat our breakfast. This wonderful human being of a woman. I don't know who she was. I appreciate, she worked for Stockman's. I appreciate her. But she comes walking up with an entire case of chocolate chip muffins.
Oh, wow. That's like dessert when they're warm.
Oh, fuck. And so it all was right with the world. And everybody chilled. And all of a sudden, everybody's mood was better. And the thing that you need to understand is that fire sucked. Like, we had shitty assignments the whole fucking time. It sucked.
You have to find the light, though.
But we had muffins, yeah. Right? And then come to find out, we got reassigned that day at noon, right? So they pull us off the line, and we're supposed to go from Roosevelt, Utah, to Jordan Valley, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
And we had 3 days left on our roll.
That sucks.
So we're all like, fuck. And like, I want to go home. Everybody's done, you know? It had been a busy year. I think it was like 2007, which was a smoker of a year. And it was funny because we're getting in the trucks and we're all kind of bummed. And, you know, I mean, granted, like, it's your job. You're going to go. So we're planning the route and I realize where we're going to stop. And I hop in the chase truck, or I was driving the engine or something. And I hop in and he hops in with me because we always rode together because it was fun. And I look at him and he's grinning. And I'm like, what the fuck are you so happy about? And he's like, I got the case of muffins. It was too much. But yeah, that's a pretty cool story about it. Also relates to why I stayed in the job so long. It truly brought joy to my life. Truly. Yeah. So it shit like that. You know, I mean, yeah, I could tell you the cool war stories, like, you know, in Phoenix, Arizona, doing 100,000 acre burnouts and shit like that. But that's the shit that mattered, was that shit. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So how is that, and I think this is kind of leading into the conversation that we've had off of the podcast, but how has that transitioned into leaving wildland firefighting, knowing that that's your life and knowing that that's your joy, and just the true, genuine authenticity of wildland firefighting, mm-hmm. to now society, now to structure fire?
Yeah, so my transition actually didn't go straight to structure. So when I left the tanker base, and so I dealt with losing fire twice, right? Like, I left primary fire and the engines and went to the tanker base. And luckily I had a guy at the tanker base that had just done the same thing. And, so when I left the engines, it was a struggle. You'd hear the guys on the radio and you knew you could help, but you weren't. Mm-hmm. And I was doing my part, right? I was still in it, so to speak. So it was kind of a little bit of a gentle letdown, but it still sucked. Like, I knew my brothers were out there doing the shit, and I knew I had the capability and the knowledge and the experience to be doing the shit, but I was doing this new shit so that my life afterwards would be better because I was making more money at the tanker base. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I was getting more hours at the tanker base. And that was a struggle. I went through a lot. You know, if I gave up alcohol in 2013, and if I wouldn't have been sober when I left officially, I would have been way worse off, right? It was hard. You felt that you abandoned the people you cared about the most. You felt like you didn't matter. It was hard. I still had purpose at the time. But I felt that I'd abandoned people, and specifically one person who I admired dearly. And that sucked. That was hard, but he supported me. And he and I are still dear friends to this day. And he and I had a long talk about it one day. And he's like, dude, you have to. You have to be able to move on. Because at some point, you will not be able to do this job, right? And he was right. I was fucked up when I left. My knees hurt. My ankles hurt. My feet were jacked. Like, I've had 6 foot surgeries.
Jesus.
Like, my feet were destroyed. And I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't. And he's like, ultimately, if you don't leave when you should, you'll kill somebody. And he's like, you've had a perfect safety record. Don't kill anybody. I'm like, you're right. You're right. And that helped. But pushing into normal society, so I'll speed up to when I left the tanker base, because that's when it got really hard. So when I left the tanker base, I was pursuing structure fire. I didn't go directly to structure fire. I was working in a ski shop, and I'd worked at the ski shop in the winters all the time, but then all of a sudden I'm year round, and wonderful job. Loved the people. Loved what I did. But I hit this huge depression, right? And I was a shitty husband. I was lost, so to speak. I didn't feel I belonged anywhere. And you know, summers would come around and you'd be driving down the highway, and you'd see a column. You start, like, checking your phone, right? Start, like, looking around, you know, and I still do it to this day. And, you know, you're like, fuck, man, I know right where that's, you know, that's Rooster Rock. I know right where that's at. I've been on that fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it hit me about probably, like, the second fire season I missed. I wouldn't be coming back. And that's when it got kind of dark. And I was like, I'm useless. You know, like, I want to be running chainsaws. And I want to be driving fire trucks. And I can't. And my identity was lost. Yeah. You know, I still had long hair and I still had a beard. You know, I couldn't smell fire in my nose anymore, which ultimately would probably fucking kill me. But I was lost, and that's the best way to describe it. I went through my day-to-day, and I went through my motions, but I was a shadow of who I should be. And the only thing that mattered to me was how I'm going to get back. And then I took the EMT course. Right. And I got to do my ride alongs. And, you know, obviously, you know what a ride along is, yeah. Right? You hop in a fucking ambulance and you ride in the back and
you literally ride along.
Yeah. You get to go on calls with them and shit. And I remember as soon as I got in the back of that ambulance, it was ambulance 3 from Manatee County. I had it. I had it again. I was back. You know, I had my purpose and I had to get a job. You know, so then I started really actively trying to get on. At this time, I was fairly old to start structure. Mm-hmm. Like, I was in my late 30s, mid-30s, we'll say mid-30s. And I was getting shot down at departments with, you know, 15 years of fire experience. And I couldn't figure out why. I couldn't figure out why until I realized it was me. And my problem was I was still a shadow, and I just didn't know it. My purpose at the time was to get a job, not to pursue a career and a life that I so desperately wanted. And then I read a book, and the book is called Extreme Ownership. And I'm sure millions of people are familiar with it, but it's written by Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, and two former Navy SEALs. And it talks about how you control your outcomes, right? Like, I am in control of what I do at all times, right? If I want to lift my arm, I lift my arm. If I want to fart, I fart, right? Like,
sometimes.
Yeah. No, I just love going, I don't give a fuck. I went into the last application period I did with the attitude and the mindset that I was going to pursue and achieve the life I deserved. Not a job, not a paycheck, but a life, right? A purpose. And I got the job. But in those 3 years that I interviewed, I tested 13 times. I interviewed with 6 departments. Fuck. Like, that's the best way to describe it. Because that whole time, I'm trying to find something that would bring me back to that purpose. And fuck, it was dark. So the easiest way to transition is to have a plan and know that you're pursuing more than a paycheck. Because that was when I realized that for all those years that I'd been suffering and all those years that I'd been, you know, having fun with my friends in the woods, I wasn't there for the money. And that was an epiphany for me. And what helped me find that the most was when my wife told me I was being an asshole to everybody. And of course, like our spouses, our counterparts, our best friends, whatever, parents, they'll always put you in check, right? And sometimes you just need to hear you're being a dick. And it popped me out of it pretty good. And then I started trying to actively pursue genuine relationships, not just with my work or what I was doing, but with the humans and the people that I met. And that brought me purpose. So my suggestion to anybody really trying to transition out of wildland, and if you are, you know exactly what I'm talking about, find a bigger purpose to pursue in the in-between time, whether you're going to be a banker, or whether you're going to be a structure guy, or whether you're going to a new wildland department and you just have a couple of seasons off, you lose something. That doesn't mean you can't put something in its place that's healthy.
Yeah.
Healthy is the key word there.
I was going to say that's a very key word.
Now, there's guys that don't.
I was going to ask you, you were in a dark place. How did you avoid what those other guys don't do?
My wife, my daughter, and putting the passion and the love that I had for wildland into other things. You know, like a good example for me is fly tying, right? Like I dove in, you know, and fishing, and I pursued it, and I got good at it, and it paid me some money. You know, and I had to dump emotion into what I did. And, you know, I've talked to a few dudes about this. And ultimately, the people that are successful in the transition are people that find shit that they love and continue to do it. Whether that be being with your family, or whether that be riding your mountain bike, or whatever it is, just do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I have guys that run through the down part of leaving fire in the winter, and those dudes ski their fucking asses off. But ultimately, they're pumping passion into something else that's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to be able to explain what goes on when people fail, and not necessarily fail, but fail is a bad word. When people succumb to the darkness that occurs. But I can't, you know, I mean, I was close. I'm not going to lie. Like, I felt like shit for a lot of years, and I get it. I get it, brothers and sisters. Like, I get it. I get what you're going through. It's hard because I think the feeling of abandonment is almost insurmountable. It's a mountain you can't climb, and that's a struggle. You know, not having your next task or your next job, your next assignment, it's hard. And I get it. And don't let it beat you. you know, you have a choice. You can either thrive or you can die. Mm-hmm. And there's an in-between there, right? There's a transitional period between it where you're going to work to thrive. But you got to do that work because it's worth it in the end. And your knowledge and your experiences and your stories and your passion is valuable and people need that. We need more of that in this world.
Yeah.
And every year, you hear about another one. And it's bullshit. You know, we always relate mental health to first responders, right? Like, and we always relate it to the dudes that are seeing the trauma and the shit. I've had more nightmares related to Wildland than any call I've been on. And I don't know if it's a timing thing. I don't know what it is, but we don't do enough for wildland firemen.
Right.
We don't. The government doesn't. The people don't. You know, they are unsung heroes that are in the back of people's minds. And that's a fucking sad thing. Mm-hmm. So get help. Talk to people. Talk to your brothers and sisters, because I guarantee you anybody would be there. But yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one to come out of, but you can, and you will. You just have to persevere and look to the next ridge, so to speak, if I want to be corny about it. But yeah, it's hard.
Well, and I think on the wildland, you know, terminology is like, you always have to keep one foot in the black too. Mm-hmm. You always, you know, for people that are not in the wild land aspect, you know, you have your black that's already been burnt and you have your green that's, you know, the flourishing grass, and you go back to what's already burnt because you can't get burnt again, mm-hmm. you know. And I think for wildland firefighters, when they can't continue to go back to the black, they have to get pushed to the green. They have to start thriving. They have to, you know, they're out of the scene of wildland firefighting. All they want to go is to the black again, feel safe.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I mean, some of the safest I've ever felt is when total chaos is going on around me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's a really good way to put it, you know, and the job will suck you back in too. And,
mm-hmm.
But ultimately, yeah, I mean, and it's a heavy burden to carry. But the big thing, and like what helped me too, is I noticed pretty quickly I couldn't carry that burden alone. Which, if you show me a fireman that does something alone, other than a lookout, obviously, but that doesn't exist. You know, we are trained to work as a team, as a group, as a crew, and we should be there for each other in that same aspect. And guys were for me. You know, I talk to a lot of them dudes and I'm like, man, I'm fucking struggling. And they're like, well, let's talk about it. You know, and that's kind of the part that's frustrating, is because people don't, you know, people close off and go to other dark, dark places and shut themselves away from the people that know them the best. And, we just shouldn't put people in that cave, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I think this comes back to, no matter the realm, whether it be women, males, wildland firefighting, structure fire, I think it's the stories like you of being vulnerable and saying, hey, I have been there.
Mm-hmm.
I have, you know, I am not a statistic of committing suicide. I am a, you know, statistic of I'm still here. And that's important. And, you know, I think one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to bring you on and share this was because I knew you would be vulnerable, and I appreciate that, and owning your own story and saying, hey, I had a really great career within wildland firefighting and I loved it, and there was so much camaraderie and team, but when I left it, there was this really fucking dark spot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's funny you use like camaraderie and team, because when you're done, you genuinely feel like you're not a part of that. And I mean, technically you're not, but technically you still kind of are,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And I felt very alone for the first time in 16 years. And I wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, but it was hard.
Well, and I can feel so alone when you don't have other people speaking about this and saying, hey, I also made that transition, but I also had a really dark spot. It's that transitions of going from, hey, you're going from wildland and now you're going into the civilian world, whatever that looks like. But there is going to be a dark spot, and maybe some aren't as dark as others, and maybe some are way darker than others. But there is a transition, and you had said it earlier, you lost your identity. Mm-hmm. You had to make a new mat. You had to say, that was my old life. That is what I used to do. And within re-identifying yourself, that's chaos right there. Yeah. Like, you do feel alone because you have never felt like that before. You don't know where you're really going. And so when you're in that middle trying to decipher what you are, your identity has been gone. Mm-hmm. You're not Matt the Wildland Firefighter anymore.
100%. Yep. That's totally accurate. And, you know, part of the closure on Wildland for me was, you know, like, I burnt my boots. Granted, like, it was kind of a fuck up because I need them now, but like I literally took the last pair of boots I wore and I burnt them.
Wow.
And it was an ironic funeral, but in a lot of ways it was a birth, right? So that was a pretty emotional moment for me, for sure. I did it alone. I've actually never really told anybody. But yeah, and it was like a not just a metaphorical, like, phoenix from the ash kind of thing, but it was very emotional for me. But, you know, you look at, like, wrestlers, right? Like, when wrestlers retire, they leave their shoes on the mat. And they leave them. Like, they fucking walk off. But it helps them leave that life, mm-hmm. you know? And it oddly enough, it helped me. And it helped me make the choice to be different in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. And it helped me close that door. Now, granted, like, I mean, yeah, like, I shut that book, right, so to speak. I open that shit all the time and read mm-hmm. chapters because that shit was fucking fun. Mm-hmm. You will always have the memories of it. You will always have the dudes and the gals that you worked with. They're not going anywhere, hopefully. No. And so, ultimately, looking back at it now, what I said goodbye to was the job. And I mistook the job for who I was. And that job was not me. That job was a part of me. But there's no reason why I can't let that job go and fill it with something else. And obviously, like, I kind of cheated a little bit because now I'm in fire again. But and I still get to go on Wildland stuff. But sorry, I've been talking a lot this week.
You're good.
It helped. And if that's a suggestion to help somebody, fucking I'll bring the gas, brother. You know, like it was cool. And it was cool to feel that go. And then, you know, like 6 months later or whatever it was, you know, to get a new pair of boots, you know, and a different color pair of pants. You know, and jump right back into fire. Like, it was cool for me.
Yeah.
Which I love Wildland folks in structure. Like, I love them. Like, I think it's fucking great. It's invaluable. So if you're a Wildland dude and you're looking at going to structure, do it. And do it early because your retirement will be better. But yeah.
But I think there's so much to overlay. I mean, that's actually what got me into Wildland firefighting was I had gotten my EMT. I had thought I wanted to go on to structure fire. I was young and, you know, had tested a couple times, well, 6 times for agencies locally. And same thing. I was close, but I wasn't close enough. And it was, you know, my EMT instructor that said, why don't you go apply for wildland firefighting? And you'll get that fire experience. You'll be able to put that on your resume.
Yeah, I remember when you did it.
Yeah. And shit, I I actually didn't tell any of my family that I was applying. I'd applied all over Washington, all over Idaho, all over Oregon for BLM and for the Forest Service. And I had gotten on with Twin Falls Fire District. And I was like, holy shit, I was supposed to leave in 2 weeks and I hadn't even told my family yet.
Which is a ripping district too. So
My God. Well, shit. I mean, the first fire we were going to, we come across a helicopter crash.
Like, oh, yeah, you told me.
That's what got me into being a paramedic was like, like, holy shit, you know, we are supposed to be going to our fire. We can see the plume. Like, we are talking everything, right? Like, the best thing about, you know, wildland firefighting is, like, you really take that wide view in perspective and break it down of say, hey, this is what is going on, but this is our part that we're doing. We need to anchor. We need to flank. Like, the, you walk through all of the processes.
Yeah, small tasks lead to big jobs. I mean, that's...
It's 100%. And so that's actually what got me into wildland firefighting. And I still, I mean, I still crave going to fires. Like, I'm thinking this summer, like, how do I get back out to, you know, wildfires as a medic? And, and it is, it's leaving that little bit of that identity of like, I don't do that anymore. I fill it with something else, but you can reflect on that.
And yeah, which is probably a lot of why you're such a workaholic.
Yes.
So I do the same shit.
Thanks for calling out my toxic trait.
Well, it's a beautifully toxic trait. But, you know, I'll never get down on somebody for pursuing shit. You know what I mean?
Like,
I mean, I know a lot of wildland dudes that have multiple jobs, like former, current, whatever it exists. And, it just, you know, it's one of them things like idle hands are the, what do they say? Idle hands are the devil's work or whatever. Like,
I couldn't tell you,
but, yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts. And it's, you're part of a machine. You know, like a well-tuned machine.
Yeah.
And they take the machine away and you're just like, fuck. Like, what now?
Yeah.
But ultimately, there's ways to be productive. There's ways to be part of it. There's ways to matter. And there are a lot of them. And I'll tell you what. My wife runs a very successful business. She will hire a wildland firefighter instantly. If she sees it on a resume, she's like, fuck yeah, I got to talk to this guy because it's what I got to do. But this girl is in.
Yeah.
And it's just because of what we're capable of. Yeah. And you know, to all, and I think we're about up, but like to all the wildland folk, guys, girls, ladies, gentlemen, y'all matter. And you guys are fucking animals.
Yeah.
And there's a life. You know, there's a good life after. And I'll tell you what, your kids are going to love your stories because my little girls eat that shit up. You know, we have a fire on the same hill every year outside of Pocatello, and we sat on the roof last year and watched it, and they were just eating it up. And they're like, you used to do that? And I'm like, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And be proud, you know.
And teach them, like, have that continually be part. I mean, I cannot tell you how many just life skills I learned.
Oh fuck. Yeah, it's funny because now I do all the saw maintenance at our fire department, you know, and it's like, just, yeah, I mean, the work ethic and the ability to be flexible and the ability to follow instructions, which is lost right now. The ability to work as a team. We could go on for hours. You could have a whole nother fucking series of podcasts on that. But yes, you have a skill set when you leave and it's huge.
It's huge.
Fucking use it.
Yeah.
You know, get out there and use it. Like, don't think that nobody's there for you. I'm here for you. You know, there's resources available for you. There is employee assistance programs through the government now. There is also, you know, federal, there's a lot of federal stuff, but a lot of states have stuff too. And it's out there. Take advantage of it. You know, take advantage of work placement if you can't find a job, you know. And if you can't, fuck it. Go fucking work at a fast food place and show them how it's done. Mm-hmm. you know, and buy some time and go somewhere else. And ultimately just be a part of whatever you want to be, and make it better, because that's what we do, you know. And that's the ultimate right there, is making shit better, right? Yeah. I've already said it once, but, you know, if you leave things better than you found them, you've done your job. You've accomplished your mission for the day. You can go bed down. And that's how you should live, right? That's how you should look forward. And that's how you should find your way out of that hole, is by finding that purpose and making things better.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever it may be, you know, if you want to start a program, or if you want to start a group that a bunch of wildland people get together and talk about it, go do it. You know, go do that shit. If you want to be a structure person and join a union and, you know, become a part of the e-board on that union and try to make the lives of your brothers better, you know, do that, because you can.
Yeah. And whatever it is, it's your part of the story, you know, like, own your story, own who you are, and let that be a part of who you are, but not identify who you are.
Yep. Totally. Yep. So. Let it. Yep. Like I said, just let it be a book that's on the shelf, you know?
Yeah.
They're great party stories.
You know, there's,
I kept it PG for you on the fire stories.
I know, when I was asking about that, there was one story in Arizona that just popped up into my mind, and I'm just like, I don't know if I have enough guts to share that to the world, because I'll share it with you afterwards. But it was just,
well, you know, now the listeners are going to want it.
Oh my gosh.
I think
gosh,
you got your 1 year anniversary story right there.
I know. My Sedona. Oh my gosh. Shout out to the Sedona guys. It was a REMS team. And it had to do with a tent. It was just fucking hilarious. Like,
oh God. Yeah. Yeah, it's the shit we did. But you got to remember, you're with family.
They are family. I mean, even after this many years, like, there's still people that I message. There's still people, like, I was down in Phoenix not very long ago. I messaged them and I was like, hey, like, how's, even if it's just like, hey, how's life going? I mean, they are your family for such a small amount of time, and you hear so much about them. Continue to check in with them. Just because you aren't in it, and this is my encouragement to the people that are getting out of wildland firefighting, our cell phones are amazing. Social media is amazing. Stay connected, because I promise you, they are not, and you are not doing this alone.
No. Yep. For sure. For sure. Yeah. With that, then that's well put. You know, I've never called someone that I fought fire with that didn't have time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I've never not had time. You know, it's funny, because a lot of my favorite people I worked with, our kids all go to daycare together, which is odd.
Yeah.
And it was fucking random. But we'll, like, one of the boys, Jimmy, I love him. I'll see him in the hallway, and we'll fucking bullshit for 25 minutes out in front of our kids' classrooms, you know, and you always have time.
Yep.
And I, pending me having an SCBA on at this point, I will answer that fucking phone, and I will talk to that person, because I love you.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Well, Matt, on that note, we're going to wrap up.
Beautiful.
I appreciate you so much coming on, being vulnerable, telling your own story, and how, you know, that has shaped you, and how, you know, that darkness has been able to turn that into a light for you. And it's awesome to still be able to connect, you know, this many years after working with teens with, that could be a whole nother episode of what we dealt with.
Oh,
but
God. Yeah. That'd be a good one. Yeah. No,
for the listeners, Matt and I, worked together at a counseling session or a rehabilitation center for adolescents on drug and alcohol.
That was locked doors. They were the cream of the crop.
It was some interesting things that we dealt with.
Yeah. Although I will say that I've seen a few since, and of the ones that I've dealt with, there was a few young folk that come out of there that really did a good job.
Yeah, you know,
and they really survived. So kudos to them.
Yeah.
I would never fucking do that again.
Like you mean lock yourself in a facility with kids?
After I quit, when I walked out of that building, I literally got in my truck and I thought to myself, what the fuck were you thinking? Never again. But high praise to the folks that can do it.
Yes.
Because that job is not easy.
No, that was that was a whole nother.
Woo.
Anyways. Yeah. All right, listeners. I appreciate you coming on, listening to another story, listening to somebody else that is being vulnerable, sharing what their experience has been in life to hopefully enlighten you and not feel so alone and be able to feel connected and reach out to the people that you know. It is amazing how many people that you will be surprised if you were to give them a phone call and just say, hey, how is life going? And you are genuine and they will open up. Mm-hmm. So I haven't ever done this, but I challenge you to call somebody that you haven't talked with for a really long time and just honestly ask, how is life going? And be open to listening to what they have to say, because I promise you, they will ask you that for yourself and you're going to have to answer it. So thank you, Matt, for coming on. And I appreciate all of your knowledge and experience that you're sharing with us.
Anytime. It's my pleasure.
Thank you, guys. Bye. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Raw Thoughts Podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could follow, like, subscribe, and share with anybody that you think would be interested in this. You can also head over to my website at rawthoughtspodcast.com and see any other guests that have been on the episodes. You could also go over to Instagram and follow at rawthoughts.podcast. I would really appreciate it, and always send me a message if you're interested in being a guest or any feedback.